This is the Skirted Roundtable. I'm Linda Merrill from Surroundings.
And this is Megan Arquette from Beach Bungalow 8.
And Joni Webb with Coat to Texas.
And this week on the Skirted Roundtable, we are excited to be welcoming interior designer Phoebe Howard, who has a new book called, beautiful book, called The Joy of Decorating, and she's also known as Mrs. Howard on her blog. So Phoebe, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we're thrilled to have you. We've all been exclaiming over just the gorgeous pictures in your new book. But as we do with everybody, we always want to hear your background and how you became a designer. I know that wasn't actually your original thing. So, and a lot of our listeners are designers and practicing professionals, so everyone always wants to hear how people go from one place to the other. So please tell us about your background.
Well, originally I wanted to name my book The Accidental Decorator, and the publisher sort of wouldn't let me because truly I have tripped and stumbled blind into this business somehow, and it just worked out for me. I never had a plan. I never had any kind of a plan at all. I just, like, it just evolved. So basically, Jim and I, my husband, had been married for 25 years, and he was a designer and had pretty much a thriving business, a starting business, which became thriving while we were married. And we had four children, and they were in four different schools, so I was doing nothing but driving carpools. I stayed home with the kids for years. And the whole time I was watching Jim with his clients and how he would present, you know, like, schemes to them and be telling them about this sofa and this sofa, but we were in Jacksonville, Florida, and they couldn't maybe sit on it or touch it, and he was showing them just tear sheets, and I saw the blank faces when, the plans would roll out in front of somebody. They didn't understand, you know, the three-dimensional aspect when they were building houses and decorating, and so I started thinking, you know, these kids are eventually going to be gone, and I need something to do. So we decided, when the last one was in the first grade, we decided we would buy this old abandoned grocery store, this huge building, and open a store in the front, because we both love shopping for antiques. We're avid antiques collectors, and that's kind of our passion, is shopping and shopping for antiques. And so I thought, well, this would be great for me. You know, I can open the store, and the baby can come here, the first grader can get dropped off here. She'll sit here till me till like 4:30. Then we'll go home. And it was intended just to be sort of like a place for Jim's clients to mill around while they were waiting to meet with him. And maybe they'll buy a this or that. So it was, but we opened up fairly large. I think the original store was like 6,000 square feet.
Good grief.
And,
wow.
And we decided to call it Mrs. Howard, which was a booming overnight success, because the rooms were arranged, you know, as vignettes, as rooms in a house. And then everything in the vignette was for sale. And suddenly it made Jim's clients able to understand, you know, scale an arrangement that he was maybe trying to talk to them about, or how lamps should be a certain height and tables and this and that. So it was like, just like his visions and my visions coming to life. And it just made it a lot easier to sell people and to show people design ideas. And then that's kind of just how it happened. I stayed in that store for years and years, arranging and hanging all the pictures myself and moving all the furniture when nobody was looking, and suddenly realized that I sort of kind of understood how to arrange rooms.
That was in the 90s? Is that what I read?
1996, 95 or 96, I can't remember.
So there weren't really a lot of stores that were showing those vignettes. You know, I mean, Restoration, I think, kind of fell into that. Back then, Restoration was just doing all the little gadget things. And so even, I feel like, Nationwide, I can't think of another shop that was really doing full vignettes at that sort of size.
Well, at that time, there were two places that sort of inspired us. One was the Ralph Lauren Mansion in New York.
Oh, right. Well, yeah.
They did some pretty fantastic vignettes. And the other one was the Baker Showroom in High Point, where they had four rooms, you know what I mean, where they divided up and put up walls instead of just these open spaces where you just kind of mill from space to space and never get the feeling of a room. So we were very convinced that rooms were the key. And that we would
I'm sorry. I will say this, Phoebe, the photographs of the shop, sometimes I think it's a house.
I
don't know when it's a shop and when it's a house.
I can tell you how. Look for the price tags. Yeah, I try to hide them in the pictures, but if you look carefully, there's price tags on everything in the store. So that's basically the only way you can tell, because I treat the stores like they are a house. And I find people, you know, sitting in the rooms just visiting with each other and, you know, spending hours at a time in there, because I never want it to feel like a store. I always want it to feel like a great Southern home.
Was your first building, was it already set up with rooms, or did you just build out?
Oh, no, we built out everything. It was a condemned building. It was a grocery store. that we completely gutted. We were drawn to it because it had 25-foot ceilings, so we knew that we could eventually add a second floor and or have some very high ceiling areas. So no,
how
we
long
built,
did that take?
It took us about a year. And wow. We were literally on a shoestring, and we opened up and we said, if this thing doesn't go, we're dead in the water. And we opened up the day after Thanksgiving, and we thought, oh, this is the busiest shopping day of the year.
What city was that?
In Jacksonville, Florida.
Oh, okay.
So about 5 years after that, I started saying, you know, our customers are kind of old, you know, and what about these younger kids? We need to kind of scoop up the next level. And I kind of kept seeing all this cute, younger, inexpensive stuff when I was shopping in High Point and the other markets. And so I decided to open up a sister store that would be right next door to Mrs. Howard called Max & Company. And Max & Company was literally intended to scoop up the children of Mrs. Howard. And Max is my son's name. So Max & Company is indeed the baby store of Mrs. Howard. So we opened that up so that you would have like a crossover shopping experience. You know, Mrs. Howard was for, you know, the grand traditional home. And Max & Company could be a beach house, second house, first house, you know, more casual, more slipcovers, not as many antiques. If they were antiques, they were painted. Kind of a compliment, and accidentally sort of created a mother-daughter shopping experience.
Have any of your kids gone into the business?
Yes, which is so exciting. My stepson, Andrew, Jim's son, has been working with him now for several years and is really coming up in the business. And my daughter, Nellie Jane, the baby that used to come to the school, used to come in there after school, is now working for me. She graduated from SCAD in Savannah and in the middle of the recession, couldn't get a job, so I got her. It's kind of it's a mother's dream. You know, a lot of sons go to work with their fathers, but not a lot of daughters go to work with their mothers.
So it could be Mrs. Right. Howard and daughter, which is nice.
I know.
You know, your story reminds me a little bit of Brooke Giannetti, who writes Velvet and Linen, because her husband's an architect, and mm-hmm. she stayed home with the kids, you know, and then about 6 years ago, she decided to become an interior designer, and, you know, they've grown together in the field. It kind of sounds the same where...
And they have a store as well.
Right.
Yeah.
A lot of similarities there, I think.
Yeah.
Now, it must be. I'm always so jealous of people, women that are married to husbands that are in the field. It must be wonderful, you know, to have.
Especially husbands that are so talented. Like,
yeah.
I mean, seriously, you know, I know, Phoebe, you talk about in your book that the bones are everything. Well, the bones and the accessories really create the space. And I think that's so true. It's so much nicer to work with really beautiful architecture. I mean, that just makes it that much better.
It's so important. I mean, you can decorate till you're blue in the face, but if the structure is wrong, you can only do so much.
Now, do you find, speaking of accessories, because you have the shops, I think a lot of us who are designing for clients, you know, it's like so hard to get the clients to get to the accessories. They poop out from the
right.
big purchases and the big structural issues. By the time you get to the accessories, they're like, oh, the blank wall's fine. And it drives you as the designer crazy because it doesn't feel finished. So did you find having the stores helped people go that
see
next,
the total
yeah, see the total picture.
Tremendously. But not only that, I've always stressed to my clients, you know, from the beginning of the project that I want to deliver a completed project. Not that I want to pick and select every single item. Certainly I want them to get their own things to personalize the space, but that I want to finish the job. So the stores enable me to just take a whole lot of stuff over there with me and play around with it. You know, and a lot of other designers don't have that,
right.
that freedom and that structure. So what I do in my job with my clients is I just say, okay, we need to allow X budget accessories in this room. And then, you know, that gives them some sort of idea of how much money they should set aside to allow for those things that are so important in the room. And it gives them kind of more of an idea. But I tell them right up front, I'm like, don't cut the accessories. The landscaper, just don't cut me.
I know, those landscapers always get in the way.
They're the last ones, poor things. They're the ones whose budget always gets slashed.
Well, how do you typically work with a client? They come to you with a blank slate and you say, what's your first thing? Do you start with a fabric or a rug or a picture or...
What I do first is ask a lot of questions and try to be a really careful listener. You know, I ask them all about their lifestyle and how they want to live and, you know, what are their hopes and dreams. And then I try to teach them to be really realistic about their lifestyle. If they have kids, if they have dogs, if they eat in front of the TV, I don't want to set anybody up, you know, kind of for failure. And then I try to get them to tell me as many things about their interests and their hobbies. And then I try to get them to show me as many pictures as they can of interiors. If they have, most people already have a lot of images pulled, whether they're from the internet or from magazines or books or whatever. So I try to look at as many things as I can to get as many visual clues as possible. And then I just usually start showing people things and can very soon into the process sort of get a vibe on them about what kinds of things they're attracted to and what kinds of things they don't like. And I always also tell people, tell me what you don't like. You know, it's a lot easier to tell somebody things that you know that you don't like than it is to really identify something that's going to be an evolution, you know, something that's going to be an evolving process. So that's just kind of how I start. And it could be a fabric. It could be a piece of furniture. It could be a piece of art. It could be a rug. There could be a million different starting points. You just need a starting point. And then once you get your starting point, it just sort of rolls from there.
Okay. So I have to keep going back to this, these homes that are lacking architectural good bones, because I live in a town where all these little old houses are getting ripped down daily. In fact, there are five on my block. You know, I guess the recession hasn't hit Manhattan Beach, but so, and all these huge, huge, massively just disgust. They're not nice. They're completely off balance. They're ridiculous. Anyway, so they're very difficult to work with, and people move into them and they can't figure out what, you know, where to put the furniture or how, what size furniture or what to do with this. So when you have, because I'm sure you're presented with those sort of homes too. So what do you do in those cases?
Trust me, I get a lot of those houses because I live in Florida, and Florida is the land of design build, you know, with the builder,
yeah,
you know, design decisions and picking all the light fixtures and all the finishes. And so I've walked into plenty of places like that.
Mm-hmm.
In those kinds of cases, if they're not willing to or can't afford to fix the architecture, I just usually use color. You know, the strong colors can hide a lot of things. I mean, it's hard to decorate neutrals unless you have good architecture, good antiques, and good furniture. So usually I sort of hide behind color, fabrics, rugs. You know, I think if you make a fun, you know, festive, great-looking color scheme, that can, you know, have a lot of personality.
Detract, right.
Exactly.
When people come to you, are you and your husband working as a, you know, team now, or is it, you know, one of you might take one job, one of you might take another job? Do you have each sort of have areas that you find you are sort of separately specializing in?
Yes, he never brings me in on his jobs, but I bring him in on select few of my jobs. But we try to, he likes to take his jobs all the way through and just keep me out of it. He basically doesn't need me in his business, but I do need him in my business because I'm not doing the interior architecture. So on jobs where I need an interior architect, I'll bring him or my stepson Andrew in to help me with those kinds of things. But we only work on select few a year because we're very different, and it sort of causes a little bit of stress at home when we work on too many together.
Mm-hmm.
So we like to keep a good amount of independent projects going at one time.
Well, that's great to hear, because a lot of times you hear when a couple works together and there's always, oh, it's all wine and roses. And it's just like, how could it be? It's a stressful business.
No, and it's not. But my husband's really good about cutting it off at night. I'm kind of not, you know, because I'm a woman. I'll be going, well, what did you think about that? And what did mm-hmm. you know, we never know. they can just shut it down and that's it. And then they just turn it back on the next day. And we just don't have ability. He's really good about that. So I've kind of let him lead in that regard.
One of my favorite homes of your husband is the one that was in Veranda.
Oh,
the Florida house that was on the cover with that gorgeous bedroom and living room.
I walked in that bedroom and I thought it was the most beautiful bedroom I'd ever seen. And it really is so pretty in life. I wish you could see it. It's so beautiful. It's so dramatic. The bed is very high. The ceilings are really high. And the ceiling in that room is spectacular. And that was a great collaboration. It's always good when we have an involved client that's, you know, intelligent and has input that's valuable. And the client was an architect, so he and Jim hit it off really well. And the woman, they moved from Texas.
Right. They're from Houston, right?
Houston, uh-huh. And they brought a lot of their, and, you know, I don't know if you noticed, they had a lot of religious collections, collectible things that they brought. That at first we thought these are never going to work in Florida, and in fact ended up really making the space so great. But that was a beautiful house, and thank you. Jim was just selected by Veranda Magazine as one of their top, or they had their silver anniversary, their 25th anniversary, and they chose their top 25 images, and that was one of them.
Okay.
I'm sure. I've used that image in my blog a million times. It's just the prettiest bedroom I've ever seen. I
mean, what month is that? And
it was a couple months ago, actually.
It was recently.
Okay. I think it was a few months back. I'm not sure.
Yeah. It's just a gorgeous, traditional, romantic, you know, bedroom.
Right.
And the whole house is beautiful.
The whole house is beautiful. And, you know, I love light blue, beigey, light greeny kind of schemes. And so, of course, we all saw that. Everybody on my staff immediately said, Jim's copying your color schemes.
Well, you do have a definite color scheme. And what's so great about your book, I think one of the best things is that you've included your favorite paint colors.
Oh, thank you. Thanks. That's the question that's asked me. I mean, as I've owned these stores for all these years, and I literally work in the store 6 days a week. I never take a day off. And I'll stand in my store. I just love to wait on people and talk to my customers. And all day, every day, that's all anybody wants to know is paint color, paint color, paint color. I think that's the number one question. So many people are painting their houses before they know what their decorating scheme is going to be. They're just being pressured to get some paint colors up on the wall. So I thought if I could help people with that one thing, that would be really helpful. And
yeah, it's a question I get on the blogs too. Every time I show a house, people, well, what color was the walls? And I'm like, what does it matter? You know, I mean, but
you
included it in it's like actually paint chips that you can really take with you, put in your pocket or your notebook, and the colors are just gorgeous. Y'all need to get that. I don't think y'all have that. Yeah.
Now with the sale, every book that's bought through us, you know, and not through Amazon or something, we're putting the paint chart in with it for free.
Oh,
that's great.
Yeah.
We had to make people pay us for the book $40 and not pay Amazon $33, including shipping. We had to have something.
Yeah.
That's a really valuable tool though.
Yeah. It is, y'all. It's incredible.
Because I know that pink bedroom that you did for your daughter, I have referenced that many times, and that particular color is such a good pink because so many people are always looking for a pink that's not babyish, you know, or too cloying.
That's another bedroom that is one of my favorites, that pink.
I did in Atlanta, and I was so nervous because I'd never done a show house before, and it turned out so well.
Well, I think pink is a way more popular color than people want to admit in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And because they just think, oh, well, it seems so babyish, but it's not.
Right. Well, I love it as a background color. And in our Charlotte store, we have a living room that has pink on the walls. And then we just keep sort of white upholstery and a ceruse oak and light wood colored furniture in there. And the room always looks beautiful. I mean, we sell everything off the floor in our stores, so it's hard to keep it completely put together all the time. But that room, no matter what we put in it, it looks good. It's just a really good backdrop. I have something else to tell you guys. Jim and I are getting ready to launch a big furniture line at High Point in April.
Oh, exciting.
Oh, my God. That's huge.
You know, and you're the first ones I'm telling about this because I didn't actually believe that it was going to happen. I was praying for October and not April. I was hoping everybody involved would fail, but it looks like they didn't. It looks like it's happening. So we're calling it Mr. and Mrs. Howard.
For
Cheryl Furniture. And it's really a great price point. So it's kind of the high style at the low end price. And one of our huge debates, one big ongoing fight right now, is that I want to paint the big first room pink and Jim doesn't. So you'll have to stay tuned and see who wins.
Isn't that a decision you have to make in the next like 3 days?
Yeah.
Phoebe, what you said that your color schemes are creams and light blues and light greens. What would you say his color scheme is?
My color schemes are that way when I'm naturally left to my own devices. You know, I of course can do color. In Southern Living last month, it was a project that was full of color. I can do color really well, and I like color. I just don't particularly choose to live with a lot of it myself. And I also like to keep the stores fairly neutral. His color schemes are just more varied than mine, and I would say he's more he uses more prints with a lot of different colors in them than I do. I sort of like to limit the color contrast in my rooms, maybe to three or four colors, and he would use a lot of other different colors. And he uses red more than I do. He uses orange more.
You use a lot of like that bright blue and white that I love, you know.
Well, a lot of that, as you know, as designers, a lot of that comes from, I had one client that I did 8 houses for, and they only wanted blue and white. So then all of a sudden, I've got this large amount of blue and white on my portfolio, and then clients call you and say, I want blue and white. And so then you end up with a whole lot of blue and white.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I like it. I love it. And we do have some of it in the stores, and it is a successful, you know, backdrop. But I try to keep my mind open to new colors all the time.
And have you ever found people said, we're surprised you could do another color? Like, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like the house that I just said that was in Southern Living last month, or actually this month, the March issue. She wanted orange in every single room. So I had to do different combinations with orange, which was really difficult for me. And this room that I did is hot pink and orange. It looked great. And I believe that color photographs a lot better than neutrals anyway. Mm-hmm. It makes it just a happier, sharper, prettier photograph. And it just looks great in pictures.
Right. What would you say are, in general, can you sort of trend forecasting what for colors or?
I have a lot of people right now asking me for neutral. They just want beigey neutral sort of interiors with maybe with punched up by the artwork or, you know, punctuated with iron and metal. I don't know. I'm getting a lot of requests for neutral interiors, particularly from the north right now, New York area.
That's interesting.
I love it.
Well, I think the magazines are really pushing this bright color,
the orange.
It. And I don't know if people really want that, you know?
Joni, do you mean like the whole Pantone color of the year?
Yeah. I think that the magazines are pushing, you know, color. But it seems like my clients don't want color, you know?
Right. Well, don't you kind of think that has to do with how the to me, my theory is that they do that because it's spring, it's summer, they've got to come out with something that looks really bright and fresh for the magazine almost. And then that whole Pantone thing, I've never really understood.
You know, I think it just makes better pictures. I think it makes happier, better pictures.
Yeah.
I find that anytime I photograph my really neutral interiors, I'm almost always disappointed. I'm always like, oh, I didn't capture it because it's so subtle. The nuance of color is so subtle and it just looks all beige and it's not. It could be, you know, 15 different shades of blue and green and gray and it always photographs beige. Even I go to pillow lady that I work with every Sunday. I go over to her house. We work in a garage. We make pillows. And she even said the other day, she said, you know, this project you just had photographed, she said, you can't see the colors at all. And we're standing in the sun and we can see the colors and we're just always kind of let down by the photographs. I don't think neutrals is photogenic.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, I think because you know, you just rely on you have to rely so much more on reflection and texture,
mm-hmm. and lighting and all that kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's interesting that Phoebe has such a huge client base, and here she's saying that the people want neutral and not these bright colors that are being pushed on mm-hmm. us.
Well, I mean, that's what I seem to be seeing right now. You know, I'd say like on the last six jobs that I've been hired on, that's what I've heard. So I don't know if it's any indication of a trend or if it's just a coincidence that many people came to me at once and wanted that.
What is the average age of your client? Is there an average age? Or?
You know, that's kind of funny because our clients, Gemini's clients, were always older than us. And now I'm starting to realize I'm 54 that my clients are younger. It's so depressing. And some of them are a lot younger. I just did an apartment in New York for this young couple, and I finished it, and all of a sudden, I'm like, how old are y'all? And they said 32. And I was so upset because I have a son that's 30, and I was like, oh, my God, I'm the old lady decorator. In front of my eyes. So, but basically, most of our clients are in their 40s to 50s.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I was interested. You asked that, Joni, because I was wondering if the sort of if you're seeing a little mini trend, you know, towards more beiges, is that slightly older, whereas the magazines are pushing the bright poppy things because they're going for a younger demographic.
Definitely, the older people want the neutrals. The older people want to have safer things. They don't want something trendy that they're going to have to rip out in a couple of years. And the younger people definitely want more color. I would say that's true.
Well, the older people are spending more, probably, so they...
Yeah, but the younger people can't afford it. It's like couture clothes. I mean, the people that can afford... The people that can wear it can't afford it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Right, exactly.
One thing I will say is that when I get a client, there's two designers that that they'll come with pictures, and one is Dan Carithers, and the other is Phoebe Howard. You know, it's like people are really drawn to your work, you know, and I will tell you that I get a lot of your cutouts from magazines. People say, I want this room, you know.
I used to get a lot of Carithers rooms handed to me, too.
Your rooms are just so ethereal. They're so soft and beautiful and, you know.
Oh, thank you. I think the softness comes from the fact that I'm sort of a natural decorator, you know, I'm not trained. So I'm maybe, I don't want to say that I'm not trying as hard. but I'm not overthinking it maybe. And so it's maybe simpler and easier to digest for a lot of people than a lot of more complicated interiors can be.
And you don't use a lot of the details. I mean, it's like, you know, some people have these detail. Everything is so detailed, you know, on the pillows and the drapes. Everything is more simple. I love that look, you know.
I definitely like things to be edited. I mean, I'm definitely an editor. I take a lot out of a room and then start adding things back in bit by bit.
Yeah, I think that's it. I'm sitting here looking through your book and I'm thinking it's just everything is just so pretty and your eyes just land on it and it's a very soothing environment. And I think you're right. I think you're so good at editing and the symmetry as well. You know,
yeah, I love symmetry to a fault, but I think also I'm very controlling and actually a lot of the, I have a certain order that I like to bring to the rooms. And the funny thing to me is that the order ends up making them feel relaxed and tranquil, but it's because you had such any beautiful wedding that you go to that's going along perfectly and everybody's having such a great time has like a steel cage or a structure underneath it that was set up by some very organized people.
Yeah.
That's kind of like my rooms are. There's a lot that goes into them to make them feel that way.
I just love the light, like the light blue walls with the white trim, but it's not really a blue. It's like a cloud, you know? Like the bedroom on page 146 with it's a four-poster bed that's black wood and white bedding and white drapes. And the walls are just barely a green.
It's kind of gray.
That was
isn't that gorgeous?
Mm. That is like a blue with gray and green in it. And it was one of my favorite colors. It was an old, you know, when Martha Stewart had the Sherwin-Williams colors?
Right.
Yeah, yes.
It's Blue Hubbard. And it's still, you can still go into a Sherwin-Williams store and get them to pull it out of their archives. But if you say Sherwin-Williams Blue Hubbard today, that color is now royal blue. So you have to tell them to go get it from the Martha Stewart archives. And I always loved her colors for Sherwin-Williams. And that was one of my favorites.
I loved
Martha
Stewart's
colors.
Did she
do a paint line?
You know, I've thought about it. I've thought about it because I do a lot of custom mixing of paints because a lot of times I can't find exactly what I want. So we'll just keep mixing until we get what we want. Because I think there are some paints that are not, that you can't find.
Is that bedroom on page 146, is that in your store or is that actually a house?
My husband and I built a house in East Hampton and ourselves, and that was it. We've since sold it. I don't have that house anymore, but it was so beautiful, that bedroom.
Ceilings are so high.
That was our bedroom. I was kind of mad about the high ceiling. Jim did that because I thought it was too grand, but it ended up being a really nice room. It was really beautiful.
Y'all saw that house? It was so gorgeous.
We got nervous because we built it in the middle of the recession and we bought at the high and then we sold at the low, but we did actually really well, but we were just nervous about hanging on to that kind of a vacation house. So we sold it.
Yeah. Whoever bought this house, do they buy it with the furniture furnished?
They bought it with everything in it. Yeah. I got some things back out of the living room and the dining room, but basically they got all of it and we didn't furnish it with the idea of selling it. We furnished it with the idea of keeping it. And I put some of my most favorite things in that house. And if I'd known that we were going to sell it, I'd never put some of those things in that house. But so they ended up with some things and I'm not even really sure that they have any idea what they have, but that was part of the deal. They took all the furniture.
And I love your dining room. It's on page 139. That's my favorite fabric. The walls. Yeah. On the walls. I love that.
Yeah. That was a really beautiful room. And that's where Jim and I really collaborate well together. I told him, you know, that I wanted to use that fabric, and then he decided the chair rail height. And then if you notice, he placed those sconces right in the middle of those medallions.
Yeah.
You know, he laid that whole thing out on the wall in CAD because all those walls were sewn in Florida and then taken up to the Hamptons and put on the walls up there. So that was all thought out well in advance.
Oh, yeah. The sconces are just perfectly placed.
Yeah. And the way the medallions, I mean, he'll start, you know, he started actually in the center of that wall and then did the other wall, so they all tied in perfectly in the corners, too.
You have a lot of light sofas, like very light. How do you reconcile putting that in a house knowing it's not going to keep clean? I mean, what do you do about that?
Well, here's the first thing I tell my clients. I'm like, just because your white jeans are going to get dirty, does that mean you're not going to wear them all summer long? No. Things get dirty, you have them cleaned, or you set yourself up in advance. I have this place in North Carolina called Custom Laminations that I send fabric to get treated, and they soak it through. You know, it's weeks, the process, and it basically turns any fabric completely into an outdoor fabric so that the whatever spills on it beads up, and then you can wipe it up. And that gives a ton of longevity to fabric and enables you to be able to use light things. Of course, I would still not put it in a family room where there's kids. I mean, and you're still going to have soil and some wear and tear. But if you treat the fabric ahead of time, then if you topically apply Scotchgard once you put it in and get yourself a good cleaner, you know, on speed dial, if something's Scotchgarded and you have the person who applies the Scotchgard come back and clean it for you, they'll be able to get the stain out usually. I just tell people it's not going to outlive you. It's not going to last 20 years. The inside of your car doesn't last for 20 years. It gets dirty. Your clothes get dirty. You throw them out. You get another one. Fabric requires recovering and some maintenance.
Yeah. There was a woman. There's a woman who runs a small shop here in Boston who everything is white. Like, that's her aesthetic, is very white. And the store is called Simplemente Blanco. I was talking to her about that question of how do people react to that. And she's like, you know, I live with it. I've got kids. The fact is, when you have something that's very light and white, you take care of the problem immediately. You see it immediately. Right. You take care of it immediately. When something's on something darker, you either don't see it right away, or you give yourself a couple days to deal with it. And that's, you know, the setting stain is the big problem, not the initial.
Exactly. And I always tell my clients too, just because it doesn't show dirt doesn't mean it's not dirty.
Right.
I'd rather see the dirt.
Right.
You know, I'd rather.
Right.
I think if people are realistic in terms of performance of a fabric, and just, I mean, nothing's going to be bulletproof except for Naugahyde, you know? I mean, do you want to cover your fabric and you want to cover your furniture in that? No. The fabric is dirty, fabric rips, it stains. So what?
Yeah.
I don't know. I've always used light furniture in this house, which is a beach house, and I have dogs and I have kids, and the only thing that I found is using Belgian linen isn't the best idea because it's expensive. And if you use it on furniture that's being used every day, it has about a 3-year lifespan.
Yeah, so I don't use a lot of linen for upholstery because I don't like the wrinkling very much more than the staining. I try to use it more as curtains or something that you're not sitting on, or something that's upholstered tight, not loose.
So what do you use instead of linen if you want that look?
I use cottons and matelassés, and I like to use quilted fabrics on sofas, or I don't know. I guess I don't use a lot of linen for sofas. Some, I don't want to say never, but I have found that when I use a linen on a sofa, I'll go back later to see the client and think, oh, their sofa kind of looks like a mess. Try to use more upholstery weight, you know, sort of a heavier weight fabric for a sofa.
When are you going to open a store in Houston?
You know, we've been talking about it, actually. We were really
on
Charlotte. We were on a huge roll when we opened, and then the recession kind of kicked our legs out from under us for a while there. We got kind of scared, but we're back up now. I mean, we're back up where we were, and we're thinking about expanding, and Houston is one of the main spots we're looking at.
It would be a great target because there's all the oil money, you know?
Right, right. Not only that, like when we expanded into Atlanta and then we expanded into Charlotte, we talked to our reps, you know, that we buy from, and we say, you know, where are their holes? Where is there nobody that's placing orders for your products? And they always tell us Houston. They also always tell us Washington, D.C.
That sort of surprises me that Houston, because Joni, just from knowing you, I feel like it's such a, people really take such pride in their homes in Houston.
Yeah, they do. I think her store would do great here.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, is a retail. A retailer apparently doesn't exist there that does everything that we do.
That's good. Yes, there's a few. There's one or two that are good, but they're not as big as you.
Right,
the
right.
Stores
like
and
the big present.
Now,
yeah.
Do all of your stores offer design services, or they just come in and purchase? I mean, how do people, if you opened up a shop in Houston, get access to you as a designer?
Well, I go from store to store. I travel a lot and I'm in the stores quite a bit. Divide my time, not equally, but I go there often, and I have clients at each location that are my clients, and then I have 20 project managers that also do their own jobs, and I kind of oversee what they do before it goes out, but they're basically able to, you know, a lot of them have been working with me for years, able to do jobs on their own on a smaller scale, so they can help somebody that's maybe just doing a room or, you know, a portion of a house or even a whole house, but you know, not as involved with some of the things that I do.
Yeah. And then, you know, because it's a retail store, just anyone can come in and buy pieces. And
Right. And then we started doing this years ago. We were kind of slow one day and somebody came in and we were just like, we'll just bring a bunch of stuff over to you. You know, so we just right now have the service that we call booty call. And a booty call is when somebody comes in. Somebody comes in and then you have to call up and ask for a booty call too. Somebody comes in, we'll take a small deposit and we'll go over to their house and we'll take a look around and then we'll go over there and we'll bring everything we think that room or however many rooms or whatever it is they want to do. We'll take everything over there, set the entire thing up. And the rules of booty call are you have to pay us right then or it's going right back on the truck. Or sometimes we'll get them to the next day till our husband gets home or something. But that's been very successful for us. Even if somebody is working like along and along, you know, they can kind of get a game plan, kind of see what the room's going to look like. Because people can't visualize something all put together. When we go in there and put it together, they have a hard time putting it back on the truck. I'll tell you, they're very successful.
Oh, I can imagine.
I would think so. It's just totally... I've seen those pictures in your blog where the room is terrible, and then that afternoon it's fabulous, you know.
Well, it's the quintessential sort of point-of-sale purchase.
Right. There's two different kinds of booty calls. One's a BCGB, that's a booty call gone bad. We have very few of them. And there's a BCGW, that's a booty call gone wild. And those happen a lot.
See, that's so great. Hey, and you're able to do that since you have a shop.
Yeah, I know. Phoebe, what is gone wild? What do you mean?
When they just go, oh my gosh, do the whole place. Then it just turns into this and it just keeps going. And then they're like addicted and it's really fun. But we have the merchandise to do that, you know. Not only do we have our stores, but we have giant warehouses in each one of these towns where we have our stores that are packed with backup merchandise. Because since we sell...
That'd be so fun.
Yeah, I have, you know, probably 15 sofas, hundreds of coffee tables in each location because I'm a coffee table addict. We have so much stuff that we can afford to do that and play around with it. And it's a lot of fun.
One of my favorite your blog is fabulous, but one of my favorite stories was you did a thing on coffee tables like under $1,000. And there are so many great looking ones, you know, and you just lined them all up and, you know, it's a great source for clients to show them. Well, pick one, you know.
Right. Well, since I buy at the very high end and I also buy at the very low end, I know who's knocked off something and who's knocked it off well, you know, so you can tell when somebody's done a great, you know, has taken this really expensive table and done it for nothing and done it well. I recognize it because I buy at all levels and I'm not a snob about that. I mean, if I think something's good and it's cheap, I'll buy it.
What's your favorite cheap coffee table?
My favorite one?
Do you have one that you can?
You know, I think Bungalow 5, I have to say, I think they do a great job on their coffee tables. Worlds Away has some good ones. Mitchell Gold's got some really good coffee tables. People don't typically think about them for their case goods as much, but I think some of their coffee tables are great.
Mm-hmm. What about lamps? It looks like you have all really expensive lamps, but I can't believe that they all are that expensive.
Almost all of our lamps we make ourselves. I go buy the vases or the jars, and then I have one guy who does the wooden bases for me, and then he gold leafs them, and then I have this other guy that wires them for me, and then we sell all the shades separately. So most lamps are our own creations, and they're reasonable. Most of them we sell for $425.
They look like they're a couple thousand each, I have to say. You know, Megan, her lamps.
Yeah, you know, I do.
You compare them to the Christopher Spitzmillers, or you know, those. The lamps like that, right? It's, you know, easier version of that, but we can't keep them in stores. We can't keep lamps and pillows in. They're constantly flying off the shelves.
On Sundays when you're working with pillows, what are you doing? You're not sewing, are you?
No. I just design them. No, I do love to sew, actually, and I'm a very good seamstress, so I think that helps me understand construction of items.
Right.
But no, I have this pillow, my pillow friend that I go to her house and we have all of our scraps in there. And then I'm constantly buying antique textiles and this and that and trims and ribbons and buttons. And I'm always looking for things and I just gather them. And then we go over there. We have these little black and white notebooks, you know, those composition notebooks. And we just staple this and this and this go together. And she does a little sketch. And then we just keep going. And we have hundreds of those notebooks. It's really funny. We've been working together for 20 years.
That's great, because I do custom pillows for my clients, and I make them myself because I haven't figured out how to, you know, like I'll take all the scraps from the project and come up with stuff, and I haven't quite figured out how to get my own sewing out of the mix, you know,
right,
because I'm
right.
just like, well, it's in this moment, and that's it, and it's, you know, yeah. So I'll have to do it that way.
I could sew them if I had to. I love to sew. I just have a little bit of difficulty seeing these days. I actually need to get some glasses.
Oh, yeah.
So, Phoebe, you're running, how many stores you have? Six? Five?
We have two in Jacksonville, and we have two in Atlanta, and we have one in Charlotte.
Okay, so you've got five stores. Mm-hmm. You're an interior designer. You're a wife. You're a mother. Mm-hmm. You're now an author. You write a blog. You design all your lamps and all your pillows. I mean, how are you doing all of this?
Wait, don't forget about the furniture line.
Right.
Huh?
Right. And the new furniture line.
The furniture line, yes, of course. Okay, yeah.
Seriously, I'm
worried about you. How do you do it all?
You know what? I feel like I'm really, really lucky that I was able to start working at 38 years old and find something that I liked doing, that I was successful at. I think a lot of mothers, when their children are gone, just feel really lost and really sad and don't have this. So I mean, I do feel sorry for myself sometimes, and I do complain to Jim. But for the most part, I appreciate what I have, and I'm just super, super lucky, I think. And I love what I do. And I just charge out of there in the morning. I mean, I go to work 6 days a week. You couldn't keep me out of here. So, I mean, every once in a while, I have a little crash and burn session. And then Jim goes, what are you going to do? You know, you'll be bored in like 2 days. So, and he's right. I almost can't go on vacation.
And your marriage is fine and better than ever, I'm sure.
Well, he worked just as hard as I do. We're both just running all the time. You know, we just celebrated our 25th anniversary on Valentine's Day this year.
So your furniture line, it's Sherrill Furniture. That's the Sherrill Furniture.
You know where the Baker's showroom is there?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Kind of across the street and upstairs. So it's across the street from Baker. It's next door to Hickory Chair.
Oh, great.
And we're very excited.
Sherrill, isn't that who Dan Carruthers was with? Wasn't his line? Yeah.
Dan Carruthers had his little showroom there. And actually, it started with Buddy Sherrill, the owner of that company, called me and asked me if I could help him sort of pull Dan Carruthers' showroom together, because, you know, Dan's not working anymore. And I said, First of all, Dan would die if he knew that. He would never agree to that. And no, I'm not interested in that. But if you're interested in something else, you know, larger, let me know. Enough, they were. And then it's happened really quickly. And this actually, since the last High Point, since October, and we started only about 3 months ago, and it's all put together right now. And it's we're going to open by the skin of our teeth this market, but by next October, it should really be rolling, because by then we plan to put into production accessories, lamps, pictures, everything.
Oh, I can't wait.
How many pieces?
A lot. It's 4,500 feet. For now, literally, I don't know how we're going to do it, but later we plan to sell all of the things that we have in our shop, you know, wholesale like that, you know, all the accessories and everything.
Yeah. It's just unbelievable you ramped it up, a furniture line in 3 months.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, I've seen some of the pieces. It looks fantastic so far. They seem to be doing a really great job. We just felt like, you know, as buyers going to the shows all the time, that there had not been anything new in a long time. And we felt like everybody was really anxious for something new and something that was a good value price-wise.
Well, Phoebe, thank you so much for joining us. It's been great.
You.
I mean, the book is so beautiful. And
thank you. I'm so glad y'all like it.
All right. It's going on almost 60 minutes now.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. And you have a whole showroom and furniture line to put out, so we should let you go. All right. Well, thank you so much, Phoebe.
All right. I'll talk.
Okay. Bye. This has been the Skirted Roundtable with Megan Arquette from Beach Bungalow 8, Joni Webb from Coat to Texas, and I'm Linda Merrill from Surroundings. And this week we welcomed interior designer Phoebe Howard to the table. Thank you so much for joining us. You can visit us online at www.skirtedroundtable.blogspot.com or download our podcast from iTunes. Search for the Skirted Roundtable. Thanks so much, and we'll be back soon.